I really appreciate you coming out on a Saturday morning. No, this is not a standard for most of our brethren, but I think that it seems to work very well when we do a Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday with this series, because normally the people that are at the first lesson are at all the lessons, and that's a good thing. It allows you to get all of the material together, and we're certainly thankful for that. One gentleman that I was reading quotes from said that there are two times when a man does not understand a woman: before he's married, after he's married. Oh, thank you. I'm glad I asked him right before I got up here if I was supposed to do this so I wouldn't forget that, and still forgot that. It really is interesting as you start to talk to husbands and wives. We've said that we're going to use a lesson this morning that's called, "What Does She Want From Me Anyway?" And I don't know that there's any man that hasn't experienced that emotion. Whether he's actually voiced the words or not doesn't always happen. But it isn't that we don't want our wives to be happy. It isn't that we don't want them to be fulfilled. Sometimes we just really don't understand what it takes. She doesn't think like I think, and she doesn't respond the way that I respond. And the things that I think will work, the things that I think will be helpful, the advice that I give that I think is going to be beneficial, sometimes is not perceived in any way like I intended. And so trying to figure out what it is that I'm supposed to offer makes it difficult. I loved a survey that I read of some young children, boys and girls. They were around 10 and 11 years old, that were asked different questions about marriage. And one of the questions they were asked was, what does it take to have a happy marriage? One 11-year-old boy, a little boy named Ricky, said, you need to find somebody that likes the things you like. Like, if you like sports, she needs to like sports and keep the chips and dip coming. Not sure exactly what he was learning at home, but the concept kind of misses the mark a little bit, even like we talked about last night. That concept is looking for some kind of self-fulfillment, looking for some kind of happiness. As I look at the teachings in the scriptures, there are some that are much harder than others, I think. Some that, not that they're intellectually harder to understand, but some are much harder to follow. You know, when you read Ephesians chapter 4 and it talks about our role in each other's lives in the church and building one another up in the body of Christ until we reach the fullness of the stature of Jesus Christ. I mean, that's a lofty goal. We understand that. The fullness of the stature of Jesus Christ. I mean, I can't be satisfied with a Christianity that's just mediocre. He says, I'm striving to be as Christ-like as I possibly can. Or if you read when Jesus in John chapter 13 is telling the disciples, after Judas has left the room, and now he's got the 11 there, and he can have some of those very good private teachings that he wants to have with them, says to them that he gives them a new command, that they love one another. But it wasn't really a new command. We were always supposed to love. God's people were always told to love. But he said that they were to love according to what manner? As I have loved you. I mean, that's a tall command, isn't it? I mean, similar to when he told Peter, that Peter says, how many times, Lord, do I need to forgive? 7 times? I mean, Peter shot out a pretty high number, I think. Peter was saying, you know what, I'm shooting for the top here, Lord, 7 times? And the Lord said, 70 times 7. He could have just as easily said, I'll tell you what, Peter, just forgive as many times as I forgive you. I mean, that's a huge goal. Well, that's what he does with husbands when we talk about our relationship with our wives. In Ephesians chapter 5, when God establishes in this teaching, where we mentioned last night, he's really dealing with the relationship of Christ in the church, but he's going to use marriage as this illustration to make his point. He says to the husbands that husbands need to love their wives. How? In verse 25, he says, just as Christ also loved the church. I mean, that's a tall order. And it's tall, not because I don't want to love my wife that way. I'm not always sure what it takes to accomplish that. When I ask this question, what is it that she needs? What is it that she wants? What is it that she's desiring from me? Just think about a standard routine. You know, and this changes. You guys are all young enough that your Friday night routine, if you're married, is probably different than ours is. You know, we're at the stage of life now where Friday night you think, hey, nobody at the grocery store, why don't we do our grocery shopping tonight? We can stop by and get things, and we don't have to go out in the crowd tomorrow. And maybe we say, well, you know what, let's stop by and get a movie. Or let's rent a movie to watch. And that starts a conversation that I'm not very often real thrilled to start, because you ask that dreaded question, what do you want to watch? And if I ask that question, what do you think she says? What is she going to pick out invariably? She's going to pick out some kind of romantic comedy. And I cringe because I think I can't do this again. I think if I have to watch some couple that just seems to be mismatched to begin with, fall in love, and then find some way to be separated in the next 90 minutes, I'm watching all these things happen that are trying to bring this couple back together so that they can have life ever after happily, then I think I can't do it. I've got to see something blow up. Something that has to transpire differently than that. You know, a love story is okay. Pearl Harbor was a love story, I thought. There were two people in love. There were lots of things exploding. There were guns going off. That was a good love story. You know, you flip over the boxes. Think about how different that is. You're flipping over the boxes. You ever do that when you're at the video store, or just looking even online or something at videos? She flips over one, and this is what it says. A reporter is assigned to write a story about a woman who has left a string of fiancés at the altar. Recognize that movie? What is that? Runaway Bride. I'm thinking, yawn. This, you know, I flip over one, and it says, three people find themselves on a train that's running out of control with nobody driving and no way to stop. And I'm thinking, now see, that's a movie. Runaway Train versus Runaway Bride. That's a possibility there. It just shows us the differences. We're considerably different. Different in the way we perceive things. Different in the way we process things. And so that's what creates the difficulty. Because God created us different. In the beginning, it says He created them male and female, and He intended that they be distinctly different. And it takes those differences to make a marriage that God intends be made. If we were exactly the same, you would not create the kind of harmonious relationship that God intends that be created within a marriage. You can't have harmony if everybody's playing the same note. A harmony is created because there are differences that blend. And God created marriage to be differences that blend together to form a whole, to form a unit. And so we ought not feel badly that there are differences. What we should do is try to figure out, how do we use those differences to blend and become the kind of unit that God would have us to have. And so what happens is, this is the wrong question. We find ourselves asking the wrong question when we say, what does she want? What we should be asking is, what does she need? What's the difference between those two? Because there's considerable differences between wants and needs. Give me some differences between wants and needs. Needs are the same. There's a constancy to them. They don't change. They're fundamental, aren't they? You know, I used this example at one time I was doing this series, and I got reprimanded afterwards for it, but I still think that it's true. I said, I need food. I want ice cream. I had somebody afterwards say, that is not true. I need ice cream. Well, don't really need ice cream. We understand that. We need food, though. You have to have sustenance. And so there's a fundamental nature to a need that is not a part of a want. If you've got children, you understand that they do not understand the difference between those two words, do they? It's always need. You know, I need this. It's very seldom is it I want, because children think that it's a need. They think their life is not going to be full without it. Something else besides the nature of the fundamental nature of wants versus needs. Needs never, how would you fill that in? They never go away. They never change. They never alter. What we need, we have to have. All the time. It never changes. Wants are fickle. Food is a great example of that. There are times we want this versus want this. Needs and wants are different in the sense that they're very fickle. And so if what I'm trying to do is supply what my wife wants, I am fighting a never-ending battle, the same as I am if I'm trying to supply or fulfill what anybody wants. Because what they want today may not be what they want tomorrow. But what she needs today is exactly what she will need tomorrow. What I need today is exactly what I will need tomorrow. And I think what God does is, when He establishes Ephesians chapter 5 in the pattern that He does, He's helping us understand something regarding the needs of husbands and wives. He gives commands based on need. And so we're going to see that there's a difference between the two of them. The command to the husbands is love your wives. The command to the wives is not love your husbands. Why? Because they don't need to love their husbands? No, because that's not the most pervasive need of a husband. But I think what God does is He has created the woman, has created the female and that and her role in the relationship, that her most pervasive need is going to be love. And so as we think about the needs, how is it that she fulfills that? Now see, we did that again. So, understanding what she needs and how to fulfill that becomes very critical. And so what we're going to find out is that there's three things that your wife needs. Three things that you need to be able to fulfill in her. All of them are tied to the concept of God saying that you need to love your wife. But she needs to first feel secure. She needs to feel secure in the relationship. She strives for security in the relationship. Women as a whole, I don't know how many people, have anybody in here ever read James Dobson's little book he wrote years ago, What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women? That's a good book. I'd recommend men read that book. It's interesting. He wrote the book saying that men ought to read it, but he wrote it from the perspective of women reading it because he knew most men wouldn't read it. But it's an interesting book. And one of the things he talks about is that one of the most common issues that women struggle with in marital relationships is self-esteem. That they don't feel that they are secured in the relationship, and so they battle with that. And so they need to feel that secure. They need to feel valued. She needs to feel valued. And we'll come back and hit on all of these. But she needs to feel valued. And God's going to specifically deal with that concept in 1 Peter chapter 3. She needs to understand that. She needs to feel connected. That's the side of the love that talks about the relationship. And God's going to use some words in Ephesians chapter 5 that help describe that to us. You are going to find out that she is driven to experience security. It shows itself in different ways in your relationship. That security she's looking for comes in multiple ways. Physical security, financial security, social security, not the fund that's paying her. Security in social settings. She needs as well as emotional safety. Holly Faith Phillips wrote this, and that's in your workbook, I think, there. For most women, security isn't primarily a material thing. It doesn't come from knowing in our hearts that all our needs are provided for. Security for women is primarily a heart thing. Our deepest feelings of security come from being loved and cared about. No question. Barbara DeAngelis said, emotional safety is the key that unlocks a woman's heart and soul. And I think that's true. She's looking for something different than we're looking for. Most men aren't looking for security as a basic need. And so as we think about the love that she's driving for in this life, we're going to see this is the way it shows up. I would ask you this, and this is one of the ways you know this. Men, married men especially, give me a question that your wife might commonly ask you that you rarely, if ever, ask her. We'll talk about that one later. That's one of the dangerous ones. You know, you've seen that commercial with Abe Lincoln when his wife says, you know, do I look fat? Maybe just a little. But you got to be very careful. But she will, and we'll talk specifically about that concept in a minute. That's one of the tests she puts you through. The fairer sex is one of the great misnomers of all time. Nothing is fair about the fairer sex, if you ask a husband. Something else she might ask you. What are you thinking about? We'll talk about that concept in a minute, too, because I have to tell you, most of the time I'm thinking, don't tell me what you're thinking about. You know, I've got other things I'm working on here. Whatever. How many men have had the question posed to you, and men who have been married a long time wrestle with this question even more? When a wife says, do you love me? I mean, I rarely, if ever, ask my wife, do you love me? Rarely. Not because I don't care. I do care. And not because I'm concerned about, or not concerned about that. I want to make sure she does love me, but I know she loves me, but that's not one of my basic needs. I'm not searching for that, and so I don't ask that. But wives ask that. I've been married almost 34 years. Judy will still say, do you love me? And I have to tell you, from a man's standpoint, It just works on your mind. You're thinking there's got to be something else behind this question. But there's not. She's looking for the security. She wants to understand. Because love is fulfilled in these three things that we're talking about. When he says, love your wife as Christ loved the church, he's going to give us some words that will help us to understand that she's looking for security, that she's looking for that value and looking for that connection in life. That's how you're going to fulfill the love for your wife. I love her dearly, but yet she asked that question. What I'm looking to do is find ways that I can demonstrate in my life and be the kind of husband that preempts the question. So that it doesn't happen. I've got a habit of telling Judy, or actually I ask her, we may get up in the morning or we'll be driving somewhere and I just kind of take her hand and I say, have I told you today how much I love you? And she always will say, no, you haven't told me that. I say, I do. I love you with everything that I've got. Now, chances are, the rest of that day, I'm not even getting asked that question. I've preempted the question. She feels secure. Now, I'm not doing it just to keep from being asked. I'm doing it so she understands. I'm looking to fulfill her need. You know, now, if I have to tell you, it doesn't work the same way in reverse. She could take my hand and say, have I told you today how much I love you? Not that I don't care, but it's not going to change my day, I can tell you. It's just not going to change my day. I'm not looking for the same things that she is. And so what makes her feel safe? What's going to make her feel secure? What's going to help her to understand that? One is when you spend time with her. Look at what it says regarding the love of Christ for his church. Husbands, love your wife just as Christ also loved the church and what? Gave himself. How would you describe that love? Give me a word that would describe that method of loving. Sacrificial love. That's a love that says, you know what, I give up myself for you. This is one of the ways. One of the most important things that women ask for. When they were surveyed, several thousand women were surveyed asked this question. If your husband would give you one thing differently than he's presently giving you, what would it be? Overwhelmingly, the number one response to that was, he would give me more time. Most are not looking for more things. Most are not looking for more words necessarily. Most are looking for more time. He would spend more time. Why? Because she feels secure when she knows you are sacrificing your time to spend with her. It shows her something about that relationship. Some things don't work in that category. I found out taking her to watch you play softball does not qualify. You know, as a man, you think, see, that's some good quality time we got together. She's sitting on the bench. She's watching me in the field. Doesn't work. You know, watching TV together rarely qualifies as spending time with your wife. Unless you're watching something that she has chosen so that you can have discussions about that. If you've got on Hallmark or the Lifetime channel, which, you know, they've got parental block. They ought to have things that just allow you to block Hallmark and Lifetime. If you're watching Hallmark Channel with her, if you're watching Lifetime Channel with her, then discussing that romantic movie that you've watched, whatever, then she's going to consider that good time together. But just the fact that you're watching TV is not quality time. One of the worst things that's ever happened, and I can tell you for me, it's just one of those battles. Restaurants that have decided to put televisions up in every corner make it difficult to convince your wife that you were taking her to dinner to take her to dinner. Because, I mean, just averting to catch a score doesn't affect her the way that it does you. She could look at the TV and I wouldn't feel greatly offended by that. But I look at the TV and she thinks, what are we here for? Are we here that we can spend time together or are you interested in watching TV? So I have to tell you, I intentionally will pick restaurants if we're looking to spend time together that don't have a TV. I wish I could say, you know what, I'm just so strong-willed that I just won't ever look at it. Probably not going to happen. I feel like a little girl. We're out at one of the restaurants one time with a family, and they had a TV up, and she was saying, I'm not supposed to be watching this. I'm not supposed to be watching this. It was the Simpsons cartoon on. She knew she wasn't allowed to watch it, but she wasn't taking her eyes away from it. She just kept telling her parents, I'm not supposed to be watching this. I'm not supposed to. So they changed her seat, you know, and asked the place if they would to change channels. But that happens sometimes. It's like, I'm in my mind, I'm saying, I'm not supposed to be watching this. I'm not supposed to be And I'm looking for the score. She wants time together. You know, I'm watching one time. She calls me to dinner. I'm watching television. I said, honey, just a minute. And I'll just tell, that tells your wife something. about how you're viewing time with her. But she calls me down. I said, just a minute. The match is almost over. You know what I was watching? I was watching curling. You ever watch that sport? It's the slowest, most least understood sport. When you're watching that, one of your first questions is, are they making this up as they go or what? What did I tell my wife when I'm watching a curling match when she calls me dinner and I'm saying, honey, just a minute, they might pull this match out. They've only got a couple more rocks to throw. I need to spend time. God says that Christ is sacrificial. He gives up himself. I used to have a recliner that I came home one day, was no longer in the house. I'm not saying that, you know, we talk about conflict in marriage. Sometimes conflict comes even though it was probably the proper thing to do. It wasn't quite as bad, if you ever saw the old show Frasier, wasn't quite as bad as their dad's recliner with the duct tape and everything, but it was pre-remote control days for us. Do you remember those days? So you had to get up and change the channel, that kind of thing. So I could be sitting in the recliner watching something I didn't really even want to watch, waiting for somebody else to enter the room so I could say, hey, while you're up, would you mind changing the channel? Or sit there parched, not even able to separate your lips, you're so dry, and wait for somebody else to go in the kitchen and say, hey, while you're up, would you get me a drink? It wasn't, sacrificial wasn't the way I was approaching that. You know, I didn't think in terms of how do I serve somebody else. I thought in terms of how does somebody serve me. And so it was a good thing that the recliner was gone, because I wasn't saying, you know what, I will put myself absolutely behind so that she can be ahead. Secondly, you need to allow entry into our world. He says, not only are we sacrificial in Ephesians chapter 5, he says that the husband should nourish his wife the way Christ nourishes the church. Nourish just means to what? To what? To feed. I'm supplying the food. I'm supplying the need. I'm looking for what it is that she needs, and I'm just trying to say, what am I going to do to help her? Well, let me give you a scenario. I'm not a phone person, typically. One of the guys, Judy's just always amazed, one of the guys at Nashua, the home congregation where I am, we'll get on the phone. Rarely, if ever, do we even say goodbye. I'll call him and ask him a question. If I've only got one question, he knows I've only got one question. I'll call him, ask him a question. He'll answer the question. I hang up. He hangs up. We know the conversation's over. She thinks that's extremely rude, but we both understand that's the method of having the conversation, with one exception. I call Ralph. We may talk for 45 minutes. We've got all this history with us, and so we'll laugh about things that are make no sense to anybody else in the world. We'll just have a conversation that lasts. And so I'm on the phone for 45 minutes. What do you think the first thing she says when I hang up the phone? Well, yeah, oh, that happens. That's usually the second thing for me. But what did he say? What did y'all talk about? You ever get that question? And I respond, used to. It doesn't. I've learned non-effective. I used to respond, I was on the phone for 45 minutes. What do you want me to rehearse the entire conversation? So what do you think her answer to that question is? Yes, I do. Why? Because she's nosy? No, because she wants to be fed. She wants to be a part of my life because it provides that security. She's got a best friend named Lorna. I have to tell you, if she talks to Lorna on the phone for 45 minutes when she hangs up, all I'm thinking is, please don't even come in the room. Don't start this conversation. It isn't that I don't like my wife. I do. But what she talked to Lorna about has no effect on me. That's just not an issue for me, but it is for her. She wants entry into our life. She wants to be fed. She wants to be a part of that. And so, you know, how was work, she says, when you come home? Every man understands. There is one answer to that question. How was work, guys? Great, fine, good, whatever. But it's a one-word answer should suffice, shouldn't it? But we don't think the same. You know, I loved one conversation. A woman came home. She worked outside the home. She came home, and her husband said, how was work today? She said, work was good. She said, I made a suggestion. You know, they're building that new wing on the hospital, and I made a suggestion to my boss, and they were very receptive to the idea, and they said they think they're going to go ahead and implement that idea when they build the new wing. And I was very impressed by that because he was willing to accept the idea of a woman. A lot of times I feel like they don't really appreciate the ideas that the women submit. And he was very receptive to that. And I'm so thankful that you're receptive to the ideas that I have at home and the things that we talk about and that you listen to me. And that makes me appreciate the fact that Brittany has you as a father so she can grow up understanding that some men care very much about what the women think. And don't forget, Brittany's got a soccer game on Thursday, and the Joneses are coming over, and her good friend Amber is supposed to be coming over on Thursday. So I've asked her parents to come over and have dinner with us if they would on the same occasion. And the guy is thinking, are you kidding? I asked how was work. We're talking about Amber and her parents coming over on Saturday for dinner. We're not thinking the same way. She thinks we want entry the same as she wants entry, because that is a very safe thing for her. She feels very strongly secure when we allow entry. And then thirdly, we need to reassure her of our love. We need to express that. We need to say things. I mean, how many times does God tell us, not only show us, I mean, he shows us, we need to express it in words and actions, but how many times does God tell us how much he loves us as his church? Doesn't he over and over again say, I love you? I love you. This is how much I love you. Let me show you how much I love you. It's where we get our security. My security in my relationship with Christ does not come based on who I am. Though I am trying to live and follow his will, my security comes from knowing how much he loves and from knowing how gracious he is and how faithful he is. That's where my security comes from. When John says in 1 John chapter 5, I write these things that you may know that you have eternal life. I don't know that I have eternal life because I'm such a good, noble character. I know that I have eternal life because God has promised certain things. And if I'll fulfill what I'm supposed to do, I know he is absolutely faithful and loves me the way that he says he will love me. And he demonstrates that. We need to reassure. It may be just a matter of checking in. You know, the old Stevie Wonder song, you know, I just called to say I love you. Makes a big difference to her when I reassure her of my love. And God uses those kinds of words, sacrificial, nourishing, feeding our wives in that relationship. And so, as we think about that, this thing just doesn't like me, does it? As we think about that, she's going to ask a question. That has stopped on me. What's that? Which way? Not helping. So, which is fine with me. We can go through the lesson without the projection as well. But she's going to ask this question. Am I more valuable to you than anything else in your life? Am I more valuable than anything else in your life? That's what she's looking for. What's going to make her feel the safest? When she feels that she is the most important thing outside of your relationship with God himself. She's going to feel that she is the most important thing in your life is when she is going to feel the safest. When we value her greatly. What's the greatest obstacle we fight in that? We fight ourselves. Our own selfish tendencies, our own desires to take care of self, and we don't demonstrate to her that she is the most valuable thing. But that's when she's going to feel valuable, when we demonstrate that to her. That's when she's going to feel safest. Look at 1 Peter chapter 3. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7 reads, husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as the weaker vessel. It doesn't say, husbands, understand your wives. Why? Because that's not possible. So he doesn't, she's female, she's created differently, she thinks differently. He's not asking you to understand her, but to live with her with understanding. And I think particularly in 1 Peter 3, it's understanding that she's a fellow heir. That's the main driving point of 1 Peter 3. But I think he's saying there's things you need to comprehend about her, though you don't understand her, comprehend things about her. He says, granting her honor. That's a word that carries the idea of weighty, you know, which is, you're talking about your wives, weighty is not necessarily the word you want to use to describe that, but it's talking about value like on a scale. Which tips the scale? You know, when you put two things on the scale, if all of a sudden this end of the scale is way down here, you're saying that's where the value is. And so that's the way they used to do. You know, you'd have to put more money on the scale depending on how much of something it was that you were buying until you brought that up in balance. It's saying treat her as if she is the most valuable thing. Treat her. We do that with vessels, don't we? God talks about vessels of honor and dishonor. You know, at our house, we've got a Tupperware cabinet. Never have I opened the Tupperware cabinet and gotten down on my knees and real carefully placed everything in the Tupperware cabinet. You know, just if you got room, you just kind of open the door and you just toss it in. You're not real worried. We've got a china cabinet. I can tell you, my wife wouldn't be real thrilled if I opened the china cabinet and was tossing dishes in it. You know, that's not going to work. So much so that they're in a cabinet of their own. You know, we're putting them up. He's saying, treat it like something very special. A vessel of honor that you're setting up so that you can say, you know what? This is something that we treat differently. He says, treat your wife that way. Honor her. Demonstrate that value to her. And there are ways that we can do that. Ways that we can supply her needs and help her to feel valued. There are ways that we can do things that don't do that. Let me give you a scenario again to picture. You come home from work. You're pretty tired. Your wife greets you at the door and says, you know what? I thought we'd just have a real light supper tonight. And then we can hang those curtains and blinds, all those wall, those window treatments that we bought last week. How about that? And you can just feel the energy escaping from your body. You sigh, and you say, "Honey, I'm so exhausted. Can we maybe just do that another time?" And your lovely wife says, "Yeah, that's fine. We'll just do that another day." About 30 minutes later, one of your friends calls and says, "Hey, we need a sub for the softball game tonight. Can you sub? We're minus a player." You know, and in a flash, you're up and you're putting on a uniform and you're going to get ready to play the softball game. Never in all of that would my intent be to say, "I don't care about you as my wife." But how does she perceive it regarding value? Which does she now think is more valuable in my life? The softball. That means more than being with her and helping her do whatever it is she's asked to do. It is easy sometimes to not feel like we are devaluing, but we are devaluing. If we don't act the proper way, when it talks about Christ's love for the church, think of all the things he does to make us feel the value, to feel important. For God so loved this world that he gave his only begotten son. Or while we were yet sinners, it wasn't based on what I was doing, that Christ gave himself for me. I need to make sure that she feels valued. There are different ways to do that. One is that we need to show her, show her that her happiness is important. I've got to understand, I'm not looking for my happiness, but I am looking how to fulfill you. How can I become the better husband? How is it that I can fulfill you? And what's it going to take for me to make her happy? What is the absolute key ingredient for that? First thing I'm going to have to do is what? I'm going to have to listen, because I'm going to have to know what makes her happy. I have to pay attention. I've got to know what matters to her. If it's something that I think would make her happy, but it doesn't, then there's no real advantage to that. But if I pay attention and I listen to what she's saying, if I act in such a manner that demonstrates I know what will fulfill you, that's what I'm seeking to do. If it's my role to fulfill her, that's what I'm seeking to do. And so I'm looking to make her feel happy. Secondly, show interest in her life. Not only allow entry into yours, but show interest in her life. And so, you know what a difference it makes? I tease about her getting off the phone with Lorna. And almost as if, I just absolutely don't want to have this discussion. But there are a lot of times that we'll have some of those discussions, and I'll just say, "Hey, what'd you and Lorna talk about?" Or, "I know she went out to lunch with Lorna. What'd you guys talk about?" And I'm not saying that just to try and keep myself out of trouble. I understand it's something she needs, something she looks for. It doesn't matter if it's what I most want to do. That isn't the issue. I'm trying to fulfill her. I'm showing her that her happiness matters, that I do value her. I want to have interest in her life. I want to know what's going on in her life. So I need to pay attention. I need to ask questions. I need to check back. When she says, "Hey, on such and such day, I'm doing this," It shows her that I value her greatly if sometime after that I say, "Hey, how'd that go the other day? When you were doing such and such, how did that go?" That's all still tied very much to her security, because she feels valued in this relationship. I need to show her that I need her input as well, and that I don't take her for granted. Men are gifted sometimes at letting the wife express her advice. You know, we'll be talking about different situations. And if her advice was as good as mine, I'd be much more likely to heed it. You know, that's the way we think. we're approaching, if she understood things logically the way I did, she'd already think the way that I do. You know, and sometimes we make the mistake of even saying things like that. We understand. But show her that you value her input. How do you show somebody that you value their input? Ask for it. Seriously consider it. And then there's a third step. It doesn't mean every time, but how about sometimes you need to heed it. My wife has wonderful insights. Whether I want to admit that all the time or not, she has wonderful insights. And even though I think I may have the better way of doing things, sometimes I don't. She does. And I need, if she's constantly saying, I think we should try this, or I think we should do this, and I'm telling her, honey, I think that's a wonderful idea, but we're going to do it my way. And honey, that's a wonderful idea, but we're going to do it my way. At some point, she's going to feel I don't really value her input. I'm just letting her, I'm patronizing her. I'm letting her say what she wants to say. I need to value her input. Listen to the things that she says. Show her that I don't take her for granted. Just remember, men, if she doesn't win, you lose. It is a relationship where I'm trying to demonstrate to the other person how valuable they are. And we do that with both actions and words. That becomes so critically important. I teach a junior high class occasionally in that age group. And I always talk to the parents before I have one particular lesson that we go through. When we're talking about love and the love of Christ, you have to be a little more careful with the junior high students than maybe the high schoolers. So I always go to the parents and say, here's what I'm going to do with your kids so that if they come home, you've got their story correct, not based on their viewpoint. So I ask the kids, I say, do your parents love you? You know, which is a dangerous enough question, I guess, of junior hires to begin with. But almost invariably, the kids will say, yes, my parents love me. And so I say, how do you know they love you? What do you think the most common response is? We'll talk about that secondly. That becomes a second issue in regards to what they do. The most common response is they tell me they love me. So I always follow that up with, how do you know your parents aren't lying? That's why I talk to the parents ahead of time. I want the children to understand something about love. I want them to understand that love is not a word only. And so the kids will respond, and because, you know, they'll bristle up a little bit at that. Well, I know they're not lying because this is what my mom did, or this is what my dad does. And I said, that's exactly the point, isn't it? For God so loved the world that he gave. And this was the love of God manifested, John tells us in 1 John, that he gave his son. Love is not love without manifestation. It isn't a matter of how many times I tell myself, my wife, I love her. It's like one of those Freudian slips, isn't it? Tell myself how much I love me. As I tell my wife, it's not just how many times I tell her I love her. I need to demonstrate that with action. When Christ loved the church, he demonstrated that to them. If I'm going to love my wife the way Christ loves the church, it isn't about what I tell her. It is about what I show her. Remember Jesus washing the feet of the disciples when he gave them that command? He had just washed the feet of the disciples. He said, I'm telling you, love is all about what you're doing for somebody. Love not only in word, but love in deed and in truth. And so I'm looking to accomplish that for my wife. And then thirdly, I need to help her feel connected, and I do that by kindling the flame of romance in life. It says Christ loved the church, back in Ephesians chapter 5, not only did he cherish her, not only did he nourish her, he also cherished her. That's a great word. That's a great word. That word carries the idea of softening something with body heat. It, in other words, maybe a greatest example of that is to think in terms of a mother. You ever seen a baby that's crying and maybe somebody else is holding the baby? And babies have this incredible ability to tense virtually every muscle in their body. You ever just watch that? A baby go tense and their arms are tense and their legs are tense and their back is bent and they're crying. And you can watch the mother take that child and hold that child close to her chest like this. And I don't know how else you would describe it except to say that the child melts. The body just changes. The muscles relax and the baby goes limp in the mother's arms. That's this word, cherish. To soften by holding close. To draw into oneself. To show that kind of warmth. It isn't only that I'm going to do for her what she needs. It's not only an agape kind of love. You know what? I don't really have any feeling involved in this. I'm only going to do what I'm supposed to do. It does involve feeling. God expects it to feel. He expects us to have the drawing in, the cherishing of our wives because she needs that. She needs to feel that held close and that connection in life. And there's three things we can do to kindle the flame of romance. Three things that will really help your wife understand that not only are you just carrying out actions, but you are emotionally involved in this. One of them is physical affection. She likes to be touched. Men are all or nothing, typically. I would tell you, one of the most difficult things for a man to do in a marriage situation is to passionately kiss his wife and to stop right there. That is difficult for a man because he's thinking. And if she were to grab him and passionately kiss him in an embrace, his mind is turning. He's thinking in terms of where is this going? She may not be. She needs to understand that he can be passionate. As one man said, men need to become great lovers outside the bedroom. That's cherishing. Just putting my arms around my wife to say, you know what? I'm not looking for this to go anywhere else. I just want you to know how much I love you. To put my arms around her waist. I can tell you, she could be doing something like washing the dishes. I can walk up behind Judy and just put my arms around her waist and lean in and give her a little kiss on the neck and tell her I love her. And I'm telling you, her entire day is made. That means all the world to her. I can be sitting at the computer. She could come up behind me, put her arms around my waist, lean over and kiss me on the neck. And I'm thinking, seriously, I got a lot of work I'm trying to get done here. You know, are we going to do something with this? Is it going farther? It's not because I don't love her. I do. But I'm saying she's looking for that physical affection, that non-sexual touch. It's why walking down the store in the mall, me holding her hand means something to her. It just makes her feel very wanted and very connected. Or putting my arm around her waist, it makes her feel. She wants that physical affection. She wants that kind of touch. Always interesting when I look at Jesus dealing with how he demonstrated love towards some of the unlovely people. You know, when Jesus reached out and touched the lepers, you think it's just coincidental that he talks about touching them? Yeah, I mean, he could have healed them without touching him, couldn't he? He wanted them to understand something more than healing. He wanted them to understand something about the connection of him to them. And so he reached out and he touched people that felt like they were untouchable. I want my wife to know she is very touchable, that I want to be affectionate with her that way. Secondly, receiving compliments. And I know that's hard to read, but receiving compliments. That means something to her. What's necessary to compliment your wife? You know, we talk about the fairer sex. That puts you through some tests. Men, does it not run chills up your spine when your wife walks into the room and says, do you notice anything different? Man, because you just know. I mean, that's a dilemma. If you guess correctly, intimacy may be close. If you guess wrongly, you don't know what's going to happen. And so you're stuck. You're looking, trying to figure out what is it that's different. How do you avoid that? Notice her. Pay attention. Notice what she wears. Notice how she's doing her hair. Notice those things because I really care about those. We have good friends that were over at our house on one occasion, and our youngest son was home visiting. He was not married yet at the time, but this couple was married. They were over, and we're playing some games. Jonathan, our youngest son, looks at the young lady and says, hey, have you changed your hair? She had. She had colored it slightly, and she had cut her hair. She didn't even look at Jonathan to respond to the question. She looked at her husband, and she said, yes, I did. 3 weeks ago, thank you very much. Well, he's learned a lesson about paying attention. She wants to receive compliments. She wants to know that you notice her. It makes her feel connected. It's why she asks you about that dress. It's why she asks you, how do I look? Those kinds of things. And God wants, and I can tell you, men, you don't ever have to be dishonest. Because the real key is, if your wife is not the most beautiful woman to you in the world at all times, you're missing the point anyway. I can always tell her, you know what? You are the most gorgeous woman I have ever met. Because I appreciate, I know things about my wife. If other people, you know, I can look at a woman on the street and somebody could say she's physically attractive. She doesn't have to live with me. To know that my wife not only looks the way she does, but she lives with me and still is this way is incredible in and of itself. I understand beauty is not only this superficial, because I always tell people, you know what? Someday, Someday I'm going to be married to an ugly old woman who's got wrinkles. Not yet. I'm talking about physically. Whether I like that or not, we're going to be old and wrinkled if God allows us to live that long. But she's going to have the same problem. I'm going to be old and we're not going to walk the way that we it isn't about physical beauty. I can compliment my wife not only in the way she looks, but on who she is as well. She wants to receive those compliments. And then finally, I need to schedule time specifically for her. This is an interesting concept. You want to know something that pays big dividends that wives really appreciate? Send your wife a card. Now, I have to tell you, men wrestle with that concept. Men, why not send my wife a card? Generally, two reasons for that in most men's mind. Why not send my wife a card? I'm sorry, what? All right, so first I'm thinking about buying the card. You know, wouldn't it be easier just to tell her I love her than going and buying the card? So I'm thinking about, really, you know, men wrestle with that with flowers. I mean, Judy loves flowers. Men don't like flowers. Why? Why don't men like to spend $40 on a vase of flowers? They're going to die. I'm thinking, what is the point of all of this? Why do you think women like flowers? They're pretty. There's a more basic reason than that, though. They're going to die. Now, I know that sounds strange, but it shows her that you value her more than you value the money. You know they're going to die, and you still bought them for her because she thinks they're pretty. It does make a difference to her. Scheduling time, sending a card. I'm thinking, we live in the same house. Why am I paying the post office to deliver it for me? I'm going to not only buy the card, I'm going to put a stamp on it. Why does she like a card mailed to her? It shows that you thought about her. Not only that you thought about her, but you thought about her ahead of time if it's an event. You didn't stop on the way home from work on her birthday and buy her a birthday card and mail it and get it to her on her birthday. She knows if you mailed her a birthday card, you bought it ahead of time. You set out time in your schedule to take care of those things. She wants to feel that connection. We need to schedule time specifically for her. I love what one man said. He had a day planner. Anybody here keep a day planner or anything like that? He said, every appointment in my day planner is written in pencil with the exception of every appointment with my wife is written in ink. I thought that is such a cool concept. All he wanted to tell his wife was, you know, I may have to alter a lot of these other things, but see that date right there? The appointment we've got for lunch next week? That's in ink. It's not being changed. When other people call, I say, you really can't move that one. How appreciated do you think she feels? She needs to know that you value her, you look at her that way. And the last test that she'll put you to in all of that, and I'm telling you, it's the one that scares us the most. You may be walking down the mall, and your wife says something like, did you notice that woman's hair? Do you like that? Now, here's the dilemma. First, you know there is no good answer to that question. Because you can say, what woman? And she just knows you're just trying to mask who you really are, that you did notice. You can say, you know what, I did like her hair, but I like your hairstyle better. Then she's upset because you even noticed what her hairstyle looked like, even though she asked you. One man said that the best you can hope for is to have a stroke. I hope it's not that bad. But it does show us something. It does show us something. There's no way I can go through life without noticing other people. But my wife needs to understand that I show interest and concern only in her. I can't act as if nobody else exists, that I never saw anybody. But I can absolutely prevent them from becoming an interest in my life if that's what I choose to do. And show my wife that she is the only one that matters to me, because that's what's key to her. She wants to feel that security. God created her. He said, husbands, love your wife because her most pervasive need is love. That's why he told you to love her. And so if I can do that by making her feel safe, making her feel valued, and making her feel connected, I will have demonstrated the love of Jesus Christ toward my wife, loving her like. I still have a long way to go to achieve the goal of that, the fullness of that. But I think all three of those are things that he does for us. He sacrifices for us. He nourishes us, he feeds us, and cherishes us. He says, here is how I love you. This is how you should love your wife. Thank you guys so much for your attention. We're going to take a break. We started just about 5 minutes late so. We're going to take a break for about 5 to 7 minutes, if you would. And if you would, if you don't have something that you need to take care of, If you would come back in and be seated pretty quickly, that will allow us to start the second session on time so we can get done in plenty of time. Thank you, guys.